Hi there. Welcome to the Dialogue on Digital Rights for Media Practitioners. My name is Roland Yagaba, and I am the founder of Mwado. Mwado is an African social network that is working to ensure that creatives on the platform earn from their content. I am also your host. This is a documentary-style podcast where we'll take a deep dive into the experiential divide between women and men in media while they're conducting their work online. You will hear views from 7 different Ugandans in the media industry on this topic. But due to the pandemic, the interviews were carried out by sending voice notes recorded using phones. So if some of the sound is not that good, please understand and forgive us. This podcast has been made possible with support from the Women at Web Project, which is under the Collaboration on International ICT Policy for East and Southern Africa, also known as CIPESA, or CIPESA, depending on how you pronounce it. Our other partner is Phoenix Reason, whose empathy workshop framework we have used for the interviews. So now I will let our participants introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Kanara Mugume, and I am an investigative journalist with NBS Television. I'm also a radio show host on Next Radio, political show called The Big Talk. I'm also a podcaster of two podcasts, one called The CoronaCast on coronaviruses and lessons we've learned, and The Election Podcast, one on politics. And that is about the 2021 general elections in Uganda.
My name is Caro Aliek Bayanga, and I am the managing editor for the digital section, digital content at the Monitor Publications Limited.
Hi, my name is Danze Edwin John, aka Dijan. I'm communications and media personality.
My name is Yvonne Injuna. I work with New Vision as a sub-editor. I have worked on TV, I have worked on radio. Now I'm working with print media.
My name is Emmanuel Sejengo. I'm the editor of The Kampala Sun. The Kampala Sun is an English language tabloid of New Vision.
My name is Sima Chakuhede Sabiti, and my background in the media has been quite varied. I have been a radio presenter. I have been a magazine editor. I've also worked in the marketing department of Uganda's biggest media house, as well as working in their online department.
My name is Eva Zanye, Ernest Bazanye. I'm a former journalist, currently everywhere, consultant, writer.
This is episode 5. Let us continue hearing from our participants on their online experiences that were not necessarily nice. All right. Welcome all of you to the podcast. Thank you for agreeing to participate in this. Let's dive straight into the question. Have you ever felt restricted in your civic engagement or efforts to create online content because of potential for abuse? Did you change the nature of content shared? Did you increase levels of self-censorship or totally withdraw from some platforms and groups?
The potential for abuse does not frighten me because I can and I do block and mute at will. Short of being censured or even picked up by, let's say, I don't know, security organs because of something you've posted online. But otherwise, I don't feel restricted, and I do speak my mind. I think that it's important. Unfortunately, we're not in an environment where it's easy for everybody to do so. And I do acknowledge that there is a level of privilege that comes with being in the media or being perceived as a media personality and being able to speak your mind. But no, I haven't really felt restricted or changed the nature of content I share. I'm pretty consistent with the nature of the content I share. Anyone who follows me knows that I'm likely going to be talking about music or dogs or natural hair or, you know, just laughing about something that happens to be going on when it comes to current affairs. When it comes to increasing levels of self-censorship, to be very honest with you, if there's any self-censorship that comes into the content that I post, it's mostly because I'm trying to protect, you know, my elders, my mother, my older relatives, or my siblings. There are things I could say which I know would eventually get back to them, which just might not go down very well. If I'm using curse words or anything like that, that my mother would probably prefer I didn't. but it's not because of anyone else. It's not, I cannot worry about what strangers think or how their feelings are going to get hurt by anything I may say or do. I'm only concerned about my nearest and dearest, which is why my Facebook is very different from my Twitter. It's still me. It's still, you know, very much my me, but the communication on those different platforms is separated.
Yes, so many times. So there's this growing trend of political armies online, that opposition and both the state have political armies and are able to, you know, abuse you, insult you in case you're not on their side. So what I've done previously, like this very week, I did a story about, you know, I had investigated the death of someone who had alleged to have been knocked by military vehicle and blah blah blah, but it was an accident, and yes, a military vehicle had knocked them, but, you know, accidentally, and tried to publish the story, but the story was not watched because, you know, the story was aired past 10 p.m. and I think people did not watch it because the president was speaking on TV in time of the news bulletin. But I self-censured myself. I said I'm not going to put this online, put a link or what, because people are, just by posting pictures that this is a story, you should expect a tweet. People are already abusing me. You want to change the narrative. Police has paid you. NOOP has paid you. Both sides were accusing me. So I said, guys, like, in my head, I'm trying to do my job. Like, honestly, I didn't even tell the story. The eyewitnesses told the story. I'm trying to do my job, and I wish I could explain to this and everyone, like, this is not me. This is eyewitnesses speaking. I know we cannot say that these are the real eyewitnesses, but their story was corresponding. So I self-censured myself and withdrew to post the link of the story that people were really, really, really fighting to hear of.
I've not felt restricted in civic engagement or efforts to create online content because of the potential for abuse. But that is really mostly because I have not tried to do that. A lot of the time I restrict myself to the work I do in the media. I restrict myself to, if it's commenting or doing things, it's mostly about my work and ensuring that we are putting out right content. I am supporting that. I am cross-checking that. I am doing part of that, and personally, also because of my, I would say because of my, the role I hold as in the media, in order for us, or in order for us to people to believe that we are impartial, we are objective, and we're fair, it is important that we give people information, we do our best to find the truth and provide it for people to make their choices. I am of the belief that we should point out wrong, we should point out what needs to be done, what needs to be fixed, with the proof that something is wrong, with the numbers, with the statistics, but we can't be doing what the civil society is created to do, because that is my belief, because the civil society is created to do that, and that is their some of the things they're good at doing. When we start to sort of take sides or become activists in a way, it becomes difficult to prove then that you are fair and objective and are truthful, because you probably are only saying one side of the truth and not the full truth, you know. So I try not to do a lot of civic engagement, I try to point out what is wrong, to raise awareness about something, but not to sort of become an activist or stress about something, I feel my job is to point out the wrong and then let people make the choice to either decide and say that this is wrong. Let's get government to do something to fix this. So I haven't really tried to do any civic engagement online.
Yes, definitely. The thing about content creation is it's not about you in the long run, unless you're doing it for a private YouTube channel or for, I don't know, school or whatever it is. But in the long run, the moment you decide to record, film, make an audio, whatever it is, and it leaves your body, your mind, your soul into a device, onto a platform, it's open to criticism. It is what it is. Look at movies. People are going to criticize your movie. They're going to give it a Rotten Tomato score. It's just the way content works now. So yes, a lot of it is skewed based on what the reaction will be in the long run. How was I looking? How did I sound? Was I cool enough? Will it get likes? Will people feel it? Is my accent different? Do I need to change my character? All those things come into mind. The abuse, kinda, yeah. I'm a very thick-skinned dude. Not like physically, but like mentally. My mental strength is very strong. So the abuse that will come in the form of jokes, hard feelings, and all those things is expected. But I always have one motto. It is what it is. So the moment it's out there on the platform, it's gone. Just let it go. Curate. Try and block. Use the community guidelines. Report. Dislike. Call out people when they're trying to abuse you. But it does affect the content delivery these days, especially for the younger generation and for the ladies, yes, and then the people that aren't really good with direct feedback, positive or negative. So I won't use myself as an example because I like the feedback, good or bad. But I see a lot of comments on people's YouTube videos. I see a lot of content on people's gaming streams, Twitter videos, posters, etc. I see a lot of that feedback and it's very abusive. Most times the content creators stop, other times they conform onto the standards that are being expected by those communities. For instance, expressing a political opinion right now is going to leave you into, they're going to put you in the field that you're going to be shot down by either opposition or the ruling parties or whatever it is. The sympathizers, lawyers, etc. It's just the way that communication, online communication, has drifted to.
Question 12. So censorship? Yes. My God is really like up there. And I take some time thinking through the content I'm creating. Especially when it's likely to be either regarded as abusive or I'm going to get abusive feedback. I often don't respond to abusive feedback because my policy does not allow me to respond to it mainly. So I let it fly on its wing until it drops dead. So, but I'm overly conscious. The wording of my text is very civil. Sometimes I hardly, I'm torn between, am I communicating to the right kind of youth who are strong-headed, strongly opinionated, and want to use all these words and they're out to offend each other? It's really like bullying. So yes, sometimes I've been taken on and people have claimed I've bullied them, I've abused them, and I've not felt I have done it. I go back, reflect on what I've done, and my conscience, if I feel like that person's perception is wrong, I just go ahead. If I feel like, okay, this was a bit overboard, I check myself. I may not put down the post because guilt may be more haunting, But I change the way I do things. I can't remember an exact example. There's one where in one long post I mentioned so many artists, performers, and it was about the dynamics of attending a concert. So I told people, so on this concert, this is the lineup. It has all these musicians, but it is going to take long. So there are moments when you need a drink, when you need something to eat, when you need to go and ease yourself. So I said, those ones who are particularly interesting, who I don't miss, and I mentioned them. That one, I go to the front. This one, I can sit at the back. This one, I can do what? Now, for one particular artist, it's called Waiki Bender. I said, that one's time is when I'll go and take a long call. I said, I'll go to the washrooms and take a long call. So it wasn't a phone call. And some of his fans felt offended, felt I had hit below the belt, felt I had something, a grudge against him. All my life, I'd never talked to this guy. I listened to his music and watched some performances of his where I had never been impressed. So I had that background. So that was the last time I wrote about him. And he's the president of the Uganda Musicians Association. So ideally, he should be a close source of mine. But me, I don't write about him directly. But I edit stories about him. But I still edit them, I think, cautiously now.
So like I was saying, the different platforms have their different levels of self-censorship. Like I said, I never engage on Twitter or Facebook. My blog mostly, even then, it's really not very, I don't really use it that much to discuss what my mind is actually. Hold on, I guess we're going to have to edit that part out. My blog isn't really that much about what I think or feel. It's mainly just for entertainment. I hardly ever say anything. If there's any place where I'm going to discuss something where self-censorship would count, that's going to be on the one place where I think that I'm hidden, because I know that the readers are so few and I can just get stuff off my chest. And that is when I go to my Medium account, and yes, there is some self-censorship that I practice over there, because first of all, I am afraid of our government. So I watch what I say about, you know, it. This discussion is not really about that. It's about gendering. I do think that self-censorship and not saying what you feel or think in an honest way, especially in a place where, in a place like Medium, where I really do expect that I'm going to get some honest feedback and some honest responses, even if they are, you know, a bit passionate, even if they are a bit angry. I think not saying what I think or feel, because I don't want to offend people, is doing a disservice both to myself and to my readers. Because nobody knows how much, everyone is wrong about something. and nobody knows how much they're wrong about. Everyone believes something that isn't true, and you don't know what it is, and you're not going to know what it is until you see it and someone points it out. So I guess if ever a man has been intellectually honest, you just have to come out and just not censor yourself and just come out and say that and ask the question. Say, for example, do gay men also say men are trash? Question like that. I mean, I would say that it sounds like a joke, but you know, on the other hand, it could be something worth discussing. I mean, just how, I mean, because you know that masculinity, traditional masculinity, has ingrained quite a number of toxic behavioral attributes in people who have been brought up under, you know, traditionally masculine fashions, and they bring this into relationships. Now, if a person is gay and is in, and so if both members of a relationship were brought up like this, how toxic, how much toxicity is brought into the relationship then? Is it a situation where like the guys understand each other and where they're coming from and deal with it that way, or does it double? I mean, this is something which, you know, can be discussed.
Have you ever pushed back against online aggression? What was the turning point where you decided, I've had enough and I'm going to say what I want to say?
I'm not sure the way I've pushed back is good, or what I've realized what I do is that when there's aggression online, silence works for me. So if I've said my piece and I've said this is what I believe in and this is what it is, and people want to go on and on, then I just keep quiet and let it die, the aggression or the vitriol, because the more you sort of engage, the more you just add fire. You just add wood to the fire, you just add coal to the fire. So my way usually is, if I find myself in a situation, is just to keep quiet. Just keep quiet and it will die out. Especially where I find it's just people just being unreasonable. But in where I believe that they're beginning to create a narrative that is wrong, that is incorrect about myself or about the work we do, then I, with the ones I can, I try and engage, and I keep telling people that the best way is to show the proof that you have. If people don't believe, then bring the proof. So if I can give an example, like at work, because my online content is really about work. If someone comes up and says, oh Monica, you've never done this, or you don't like to do this, or you don't do this at all, then I'll go and dig it out archives, I'll go and get the stories you've done. If someone comes and says, you know, you guys don't do stories enough about corruption, you've never pointed this out, but you've never done this, people come and say, you guys, Monica, you've never done this story here, and you've never said anything about it. You're just cowards, you're just hiding trust from people. So I will go and dig it up, but if I know for sure you've done the story, I'll go and look up all everything we can, you know, go and see what has Monica done. There, you know, videos, you from NTV or news clips, KFM if I can find, stories. I just get as much information and then share, you know, politely and say, you might have missed this, but we actually have done quite a bit of work on this area, on this part and this part. Please do go through all these links, listen to this video, listen, watch this video, listen to this audio clips. You will notice that we have covered this topic or this issue or this particular story in depth. So I find that tends to also silence people. Other times it gets them to apologize, the ones who are you know, professional enough or who are big enough to come back and apologize and say, I didn't know. Thank you for sharing this. I actually let me use it to learn more, to share with others. So usually, I go for the proof. I go for the stuff that I know is there. It's real. You can touch it. You can see it. And you can know and say, okay, yes, we did this. If you're thinking we didn't do this, we did this. Here's the proof. We talked about this. We did this story. We investigated this bit. Or that was a lie. And this is this. We can show that that was a lie. I find that tends to work. The first sample will keep on. We'll go on and say how we are doctoring things and everything. But generally, I tend that things to work.
So no one is ever really aggressive towards me individually online. Well, there were a couple of times when. Well, the only time was that time, like I told you about, when the men are trash thing, when someone said that Bazanye is anti-feminist and he disgusts me. This was the state in the tweet. And I don't know the person, but I just figure that, I don't know, after that day of me, things went out of hand. Because actually I met someone in person and they actually said the same thing to me. I said that, I was told that you're like this, but this colleague of mine, this very good friend of mine who is a colleague of yours and also a very good friend of yours, says the opposite. What, which is it? And I said, I didn't even know I had that reputation. It came from Twitter and things being out of context. But the only time someone acted me and basically said that I was disgusting. What my reaction was, you know, do not push back, because you need to understand, because there's, I need to understand that there's a difference between what is said, what is understood, and what is meant. And this person clearly didn't know what I was saying and was not going to be receptive to any explanations, and also they were not capable of actually doing any harm to me. So I just muted, and that's what I typically do. If someone is to say something that seems to be heading towards the direction of, I get very, very little aggression online. Even when someone disagrees with the point I've said, maybe I said something, made a Bobby Wine joke, and Bobby Wine fanatic thinks that this is a criticism of their hero, and they attack me and say I'm a Museveni psychopath. I just mute that. I just won't. Do not engage. That is my motto on Twitter. Do not engage.
Social media users are really, really aggressive, and the only way to handle them is to be aggressive too. I have told you about self-censorship, but as you're censoring yourself, remember to say whatever you want to say, whatever is on your mind. How you say it is what matters. But saying what you want to say really has no problem. You have rights. You have the rights to express yourself in whichever way you want, but it will come back to you. Yeah, there's no one who will restrict you from expressing yourself the way you express yourself, but it is going to come back to you once you express yourself in an inappropriate manner. So you just have to be yourself online, yeah, because we idolize the people that we see on social media. We want to do what they do without knowing what they actually go through to do what they do or look the way they look. Yeah. But when you become yourself on social media, you be who you really are in real life, you will also find it very easy to censor yourself. Not even censoring yourself, but you will find it very easy that you are saying whatever you want to say in a good way, and there's nothing that will come back to you.
I actually tried to push back, and this was then when I was trying to investigate things, and people were saying that I had been paid, and I, instead of, you know, like going on to argue with them and what, I did not push back, and instead I went silent. So whenever I do stories that people do not want you to believe in, remember that both sides of the coin want to attack you because you're not on their side. And they have tried to get you on their side and they have failed. So what I've done is, you know, just do what the right thing is and withdraw. Don't comment, don't reply anyone, don't make anyone feel important just because you noticed their tweet or reply. So just go mute, keep quiet, scroll through the replies, see what people are saying about your feedback. If it is constructive feedback, well, take it. If it's not, ignore it. Don't reply it.
I was a very shy dude, like back in the day. Like, we're very shy. I mean, a family of over 9 kids, 7 family, the rest are cousins, adopted ETC. And being one of the last people in line, second last born an ETC, means I haven't been very expressive in a long run. I've been always protected, going through all the schools I've gone through. I've been to multiple schools, but I found my foot in terms of expression and communication when I reached my Form 4. Like, that was my breaking bad. HSC onwards, I became very confident in speech. It borderlined on arrogance or pride, but it's just basically knowing who I am, what I represent, and what I can bring to the table. So those turning points allowed me to be able to be expressive. Then eventually, when I started working for Sylvia, back in the day, I saw models, I saw how she was, I saw prices, low prices, things like that. I saw tough and good times, and I understood that expression is extremely important. That's what she always told me to do. Be expressive, speak, say, apologize, appraise, things like that. And because that was my first online gig, did for our online stores, social media and etc, I learned that the virtual space allows me to speak my mind, allows me to, it's my therapy, it's where I'm going to be able to indulge without tweeting, but also senses, it triggers all those things in me. And that's how I learned that this is my TAF, this is my private account, this is my page, this is my YouTube channel, this is the page I'm managing, it's the brand I'm representing. You come at me, I'm going to come at you, but in a professional way, things like that. Of course, when I went into agency, I learned to practice public relations, crisis management, and basic communication. So I understood the lingo, advertising design, communication design. So it allows me to deal with the end user, myself, the platform itself, and the other third party accounts that may be involved in this whole matrix of communication online. Yeah, so what was the turning point when I decided I had enough and were going to say what I wanted to say? Is basically when I started to command an audience of about 5,000 followers. I realized these people aren't just here because they like my AV or my bio. They're here because of the things that I'm saying. The posts I'm putting on Facebook, the Instagram images I'm putting, the videos, the streams, the work that I'm doing, the feedback I give to them, the trainings I do. And I realize at no point in time should someone make me feel small. They may disagree with me, that's totally fine, but they should never make me feel small, because in this scenario I own this space. As long as I don't offend someone or go against that platform's community guidelines, I stay in the right direction and in the right vibe. Like, the force bees with me at that point. I'm just Star Wars reference that thing. So yeah, that's how I kind of do that. Online aggression is always expected. I always expect someone to disagree with me. Someone will call you a clown. It may offend you. You keep quiet. Someone may subtweet you and attack your brand. I see that a lot. I always ignore those people, so I don't give them much gas. But when I need to discern something, I always do immediately. And I think if you arm yourself with so much knowledge on how to behave online, it allows you to take down any form of aggression. Unfortunately, not everyone has that ability or power or knowledge yet. But I believe with the right pushes, with the right knowledge, it eventually pans out. Yeah. So that's how I kind of approach that. Not saying that I don't get phased. Yes, I do get phased when my brands are attacked, when I'm attacked personally. It kind of hits you in the heart, but because you're used to these blows every day, you always have to get up and keep on going. Like Cap says, I can do this all day. So that's how I roll with those punches. Yeah, thank you.
Usually, if anything, it would be me coming to the defense of someone else. If somebody's going to be aggressive towards me online, like I said, Chances are, and it depends, I may respond, but probably I will just block you because I think that, you know, life is hard enough as it is. There's enough negativity in the world. If anybody's going to come to the timeline or to my timeline and be negative or aggressive or hateful, why should I waste time engaging with them? Who has that energy? I'd rather just block you. If you will not block me because you don't like what I have said, let me save you and I will block you. What was the turning point when you decided you'd had enough and you're going to say what you wanted? I don't think there was a specific turning point because I've kind of always been that way. I will say what I want because it's my timeline or it's my page or it's my blog or it's mine. If you do not like what I'm saying, then the burden is on you. You block me, unfollow me. You're not going to tell me, Seema, I don't like what you said. I need you to stop saying it. No. You block me so that you do not need to see what I'm saying. But I am going to insist on staying true to myself and speaking my mind and speaking my truth.
What tools and techniques do you use to keep yourself safe online?
Like I said, I'm a Twitter person. I do try to work on my Instagram and Facebook presence, but I have a blog as well. So I'm more of a Twitter and sort of blogosphere person. So those are the things that keep me online, and of course reading a lot and doing research and so on. Those are the tools that I use to keep myself online. I wouldn't say that there's a technique per se, because where we've reached in the world right now, you kind of have to be online. I don't think you can avoid it when it comes to anything from communicating or posting videos or your banking. So I wouldn't say that there's a specific technique that I use to keep myself online. It's just that I have to be online.
First of all, I have all social media platforms downloaded: LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, Snapchat, all of them. I have them. But what keeps me online is like different apps being able to track data. For example, if there's something trending online and we have interest in as the newsmen, what we do is deploy certain apps and they're able to track the online trends and what people are saying and what the engagement is saying. Like socialbakers.com, they show us what the biggest engagement was and also how much engagement was about a certain topic that did trend. Is it constructive engagement or just engagement that is not constructive or trendy? We're able to do that. So there's so much, like Social Bakers, I use it so much. Socialbakers.com just brings you a report of how each trend is doing, and you're able to either pull out a story or not.
I really don't have like specific tools and techniques, but I have like, you know, some tips. When you're on social media, when you join social media, know who to follow. Follow interesting people, follow interesting pages, so that you know your activity or time on social media does not become boring. But then also know when to say what. Have the self-censorship within you so that you don't say inappropriate things and you're trolled, because social media trolls can even lead you into depression. Please avoid that by censoring yourself. Know what to say and when. Do not say anything that is inappropriate.
To keep myself online, I do a lot. There is the password, me as Emmanuel Sejengo. I get strongly opinionated when I'm posting as on my individual platforms, and that keeps my online presence going and going and going and going and going. As an editor of a publication, when I'm posting as that on those platforms, of course, there are all these boosting offers, which we use to grow it. But the other thing I do is regularly respond to people who respond. So I comment on comments. I comment in a light way to show people that this is light. But I also comment with fact, because I believe people come to publications looking for facts so they can make their decisions. So I want to keep them going that way. However, over time I've learned that at one time there were surveys which actually indicated that most online in Uganda happens at the desktop and during working hours. So the idea then, the text and pictures we're using were for that kind of big screen. We had that in mind. Right now, we're trying to change that. A person is on the phone, has to scroll and all that. So how much text do you give? If it's going to be long, you know, you need a punchline here and there. If you will have to have more than one talking point for people to get engaged, and you know, you will not use very heavy pictures for people to be able to download very fast. Our internet speeds here, we all know, are very low, and it's disturbing. So we consider all those facts. So you'll find me using very small pictures, not very heavy. You'll find me using very limited text. The diction is just point. I would want to say one word and people pick five meanings instead of saying five paragraphs. So those are the tools that have helped me keep going.
There are many tools and techniques that are online that one can use to keep himself as safe as they possibly can. Although people are interesting, they keep finding ways to get into the system or to get into to get back at you if you. Those who are good with technology. But what I like about a number of these social media sites, like Twitter, for example, is that it allows you to. Facebook, even Instagram, they allow you to determine who follows you. You allow them to follow you or not, or you can keep your account private, like on Instagram, and really sort out who follows you. I can also see that Twitter now on comments, you can determine if you want a particular tweet commented on or not. So I think the variety of ways, that's for social media, for people who have websites or blogs, depending on the kind of, you know, website you have, and it's advanced, and how advanced it is. You can also determine the kind of comments that come through, who can comment and, you know, who can't, and how they can comment. So there are many various ways. Personally, when it comes to myself, I don't use many of those. What I do is that the one thing I'd say I do is that I let people follow me. That's fine. I don't currently block, you know, anyone or anything like that. Whenever a person follows me, I just go back and check and say, oh, who is this? This is interesting. Well, if I don't know them, I go and check who are they, what do they do. What do they tweet about? What have their comments been like? What are their replies to different people? What is their bio saying about them? So it doesn't necessarily give me the full picture, but I can have an idea and say, okay, this person is interested in that, this person is this kind of person, they like this, they don't like that. And then I can, you know, just have an idea. I just know that, okay, this person is like this, they're interesting, they're, you know, funny, or they have this particular topics they're interested in. And then, you know, I just know who they are. It's just for me, I like to know who the people are, what they do, their interests, so that then I have an idea of who's following me and what they're likely to reply on the things I say or comment upon. So I've not really had to block someone or, you know, I haven't.
My number one tool I use to stay online is common sense and humanity and humility. Those are the things that I use first before, because I know the virtual space, you will get lost into that drift. It's like being in a time warp, if you're a fictional person. I try to use as much common sense before I tweet out something, and then I try to lay a timeline of where this com will start from and where it may end. So most times I tweet and I first leave it, I read through it and I think about all the possible reactions to it, and then I probably hit send. Same thing with images before I put them out. I first use common sense and think before I post them. Even a quote, because it may be misunderstood by multiple other people out there. So it's the same exact thing I always do. That's my number one tool. My brain, my intuition, and then common sense. Then when it comes to real-world tools, I use Grammarly, I use dashboards, TweetDeck, Facebook, I know, you name it. All the possible software that's out there that's going to enable me to put out the best possible content. Canva, for example, when I want to do some amazing graphics, I use those. Premiere Pro to do my videos. And then the smartphone, it's literally the best tool out there, because it's in your hands, it's on the go, and you're in control of the content and the output, depending on how skilled you are in the long run. Internet, the basics. And then communities, I would say this, because your circles determine what kind of influencer, what kind of brand, what kind of private account that you're going to be online, because they will check your followers, they'll see the content you're retweeting, the content you're liking, the Facebook, the Instagram content that you're double tapping, the Facebook groups that you're in, how you're commenting to people and the reaction that you give out, and how you behave during your live feeds. So those communities also define, they become a tool in the long run.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks once again to our participants for agreeing to be a part of this, and thank you to the women at Web Project and Cypessa for making this happen, and Phoenix Reason for allowing us to use their framework. Catch you on the next episode. I remain Roland, your host.